Yeah, El Salvador is going to be setting an example
Yeah.
for the rest of the world. And I think we're going to reach an inflection point where nation states around the world are going to have to decide what direction they want to go. Do they want to go the CBDC, World Economic Forum direction, or do they want to go the decentralized power Bitcoin direction? And this country is setting the alternative example.
Yeah, it's already started.
Yes, and because it's the first mover, it has that first mover advantage. Right. And as those lines are drawn, and we start to see that the I guess you could say almost bipolar world, the dual system where one is absolute tyranny and the other is characterized by liberty, El Salvador having the first move on the liberty side is going to be sort of the genesis block of the new world. And we will see, I believe, I hope, as the cynic and pessimist of us, I still hope that we will see El Salvador become known in history for its inventions, its innovations, its contributions that spread around the world and improve the lives of millions or billions into the next century.
I'm really looking forward to this chat. Jessica and Ryan, you guys are both from Canada, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So before we go ahead, the reason I contact you, amongst other so-called, I don't know, you guys called yourself expats. Maybe you can, because I'm so, forgive me my ignorance, but what does an expat mean actually?
Okay, so it's a short form for, oh, actually, first of all, thank you for having us.
Well, yes, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here. But expat is like short for expatriate. Meaning we used to be patriots or patriated by our home country, our country of birth, and we have since become expatriates. For us, it means a lot of different things to different people, but for us, I'd say it means it's kind of like a breakup.
Yeah.
We kind of broke up with Canada, I suppose you could say.
Yeah. For good reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your audience probably already has some idea of Definitely. What those reasons are. Yeah.
I'm just going to let you talk. I mean, why don't you just, go ahead, both of you, your background, what was your desire? What was the motivation, the triggering point that, that made you like make extremely, existential decision also, I would say, because we were thinking also my girlfriend and our, with our almost 2-year-old daughter, at that time in Austria when they were trying to coerce people into taking the vaccine and not maybe with jail time, but with, high, monetary penalties. I mean, it was just disgusting. And so they had to repeal the law and we were like panicking and we're like, we got to pack our stuff and just go somewhere. So, so this is where we came from a little bit, but now, everything is more relaxed and at least we have a little bit more time, to plan and to think ahead, but it's definitely on our list, El Salvador or just to emigrate out of Austria. But please go ahead and.
Well, yes. So like we are just one small part of a very large and growing community here in El Salvador, of expats. And some would say that we might meet the definition of refugee, insofar as the whole community here has fled one form of political persecution or economic violence or another. We fall into probably both categories, given our experience in Canada. We came here. Actually, we were just talking about this yesterday. It was quite a year, 2022. the year started off in January 2022. We had plans, we had a piece of land purchased and we had plans to build a house in Nova Scotia. And by the end of 2022, we were in Central America in El Salvador. It's a long journey. Essentially, what happened to inspire that decision was in February, the Prime Minister of Canada declared that the Emergencies Act would be in force. This is a
this had never been done before.
Yes.
Except for when?
Well, there was a different act that was similar that was invoked during like a terrorist attack in Quebec some 50 years ago, 40, 50 years ago. But the act was then revised, and this was the first implementation of the Emergencies Act in Canada. And it was directed toward the existential threat that justified it was the working class.
Citizens of our own country?
Yeah, exactly. Canadian citizens had become an existential threat to Canada, requiring the suspension of certain limits to the law in order to restore order, they said. And this included, among other things, including actual violence, which happened in Ottawa, where we were not, where a woman was trampled by a horse, people were beaten, a reporter was shot in the face with a tear gas canister, on and on it goes. But we in Nova Scotia, we became victims of economic violence insofar as we woke up the morning after the Emergencies Act came into force to discover that we no longer had access to our bank accounts. So that was a sea change. When you suddenly realize that you can't pay your bills, you can't pay your rent, you can't pay your phone bill, can't put gas in the car, you can't buy any food, and that one man, by the stroke of a pen, has taken all of that away from you, well, it's enough to make you think about breaking up with your country. Let's put it that way. And that immediately set us on that course, this experience. And well, I don't want to talk too long. I'm sure you have questions, but long story short, we were engaged at the time. We started making plans. 3-4 months later, we got married. And then a week after our wedding, we boarded a plane after having liquidated everything that we own, and we landed in El Salvador on July 24th, 2022. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That must have been like a very shocking, even understatement, but this must have been like, people talk about CBDC, central bank digital currencies, what absolute control, absolute surveillance, absolute control of people's lives. You know, this is like the practical demonstration what the CBDC could mean, right?
That's right. It's like the trailer before the movie. It was a preview of what's to come. And, we saw that. And we were at the beginning of our marriage, the beginning of our lives together. And we thought, how do we want to live that life? Do we want to live in constant fear, self-censoring, unable to speak how we really feel to our friends, to our families, having to be careful what we say or don't say at work, always wondering if your income is going to be shut off again, if your access to your funds is going to be shut off again? Do we want to live in that fear? Or do we want to go to a country where personal liberties, economic liberties, and freedoms are being expanded every day? And once we started thinking about it in those terms, it's a pretty easy decision to make when you get down to it. Yeah.
Right. Before I forget, first of all, congratulations to your wedding and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you too.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it was not very spectacular last time, but we have a beautiful view from out of the window. We can see all the fireworks because we're at the top of the hill. I was just talking to your wife while you were gone, so we have a beautiful environment surrounding. When you made that decision when you both made the decision to go to El Salvador, did you have that feeling or that perspective? Okay, this is the country, this is the land where you can imagine, you have the feeling this is something, permanent, like, you will feel safe, you will feel welcome, your property rights will be, I'm already going a little bit into the details maybe of some my questions, but, about sure. Property rights, because these were the questions that occupied our minds, if we go, should we rent, should we lease, should we buy, especially for families, for people with children, is homeschooling allowed? So all these questions, popped up in our mind, and it's a lot of existential questions. So what was your feeling?
Well, I can't really speak for Ryan, but
I'm sure you can.
Oh, sure I can. It was definitely something that we had to look into before. We had originally set out to go to Mexico, but about a week or two before we actually moved, we thought, like, you know, we were really into Bitcoin and, you know, we watched some videos on it, did a little bit of research. We had some friends who were already down here who we were in contact with, and it just seemed a lot, there was a lot more action going on here than what was in the media happening at the time. We would hear a lot of stuff about, like, you know, the gangs and everything that's going on and everything that Nayib Bukele was doing, but we got down here, we took a chance, and of course we were wondering, okay, well, where do we go? What, how do we necessarily find an apartment? We've tried looking when we were in Canada, but that turned out to be the wrong idea,
the wrong way to go about it,
because you really have to be down here to experience, even if you have to, you know, rent an Airbnb for a week or a month to until you get settled. That option is there. There was a lot of questions about, like, you know, are we able to open up a bank account? Like,
yeah,
how will we manage, like, getting around, getting a car, as, like, people who are not originally from the country and not really kind of just diving feet first into something we had no idea, because mm-hmm. we're from Canada, right? So we're used to cold, snow, weather that's not, as you can see, like, mm-hmm. it's January. Like, like, my birthday's in January, so I'm gonna have my first summer birthday in like 30 some odd years, you know?
Yeah.
So there was that. There was a lot of questions, a lot of answers, but we just feel really lucky and so blessed that we've had contacts down here to prepare us, not just moving down here, but, like, reassuring us that, okay, well, when you get here, we will be here to help you along. Just reassuring us that the fine folks of El Salvador are as nice and wonderful
as is claimed.
And as we have learned. So
yeah, like, it, like, there was more questions than answers before we made the leap, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. We were trying frantically to answer all the questions before we left, but we reached a point where it was just, we suddenly realized that we're going to arrive with more questions than answers. There's no way around that. And, like, in terms of safety, we didn't really know what to expect. From Canada, El Salvador was a very opaque concept to us. It's hard to really trust what you hear. Our media was saying that the country was basically a war zone run by a dictator who was gambling the country's money away on Bitcoin. We knew that wasn't true, but we didn't know what was true in place of that lie, right? We thought maybe, okay, so the gangs are getting under control, but it's still a problem. When we first arrived, we didn't feel totally safe. We would feel nervous walking up and down the road. But after about, I'd say, 2 weeks, not even that long, we started to realize that was all in our heads. That was all the perception of El Salvador that had been put there prior to our arrival. And as we started to sort of settle in, we started just realizing this is just a normal country. It's not different than any other country, really. It has roads and houses and water and electricity and infrastructure and bridges, and it's a normal country. Except it's a normal country that is embarking upon a spectacular experiment, which we believe is akin to the beginning of the American experiment when the Pilgrims first arrived in at Plymouth Rock there.
Well, that's a good comparison, yeah. When did you, like, or was it important for you to, before you sort of immigrate or move to El Salvador, to make contact with other, you know, similar minded, or, you know, or would it be Canadian people or not, you know, did you try to make contact, or, you know, to sort of bond and connect with other people, and so you have sort of a, you know, friendly environment around you?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that helped make the very stressful move here.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lie, it's not, you get here and we're like, hey, it's great, but it was not a pretty, it wasn't pretty getting from Canada to here.
No.
It was tough. It was stressful. It was a lot of like difficult conversations, and it really helped having somebody who, like I said, was either was already here or was going to be there prior to us arriving, and getting the experience, kind of getting the ground floor, putting in the groundwork for us before we came here. If that answers the question.
Like, there are two people in particular who were instrumental to our making the decision to come to El Salvador. Their names are Nikki and James. They have a YouTube channel, Nikki and James in El Salvador. They inspired us to start our YouTube channel, Two People in Paradise. And it was finding them on YouTube and going through their videos, and we started to see, okay, so this actually looks like a tenable option for us. We reached out to them directly. They generously gave us some of their time on like a Zoom call like this. And they answered some of the, I mean, they can't answer all our questions. There's always more questions than answers.
We still have questions.
Yes,
whenever
exactly.
Whenever we see them.
Like, how do we get our driver's license? But they laid a foundation for us that we could put our feet on and say, okay, we can actually stand here. And if it weren't for them, I don't know if we would have been here, if we would have stuck with the Mexico plan. Mm-hmm. Since that time, since arriving here, we have discovered that there is a huge, huge community of people from all over the world who come to this country for very similar reasons and who thereby are very like-minded. There's people here from Italy, Australia, New Zealand,
the Netherlands.
Obviously, lots of Canadians are here. Lots of Americans are here. But what really actually stands out is that all the time there are people who were born here 20, 30, 40 years ago, and who maybe left when they were 1, 2, 3 years old, and now they're coming home and sort of rediscovering their heritage and their culture. At the same time, all these foreigners are discovering the heritage and the culture. It's really something to be immersed in that and to watch that happen all around us all the time. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, you know, just for your information, I mean, I was born in Iran, and I went, you know, I came with my father. My father already dead a few years ago. He died, but he came with me to Austria in 1979, you know, during or in the middle of this revolution or whatever it's called, and this horrendous regime now taking over. And anyway, so and there's, you know, there's like a huge diaspora, like millions, mm-hmm. I don't know how many millions and millions of people all over the world. Most of them, or lots of them, are in California, where I lived like for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and every Iranian or Persian people I meet or have met, I don't know anybody who does not, let's say, you know, hate this Iranian, you know, this Ayatollah, yeah, whatever, theocratic regime or whatever it's called. People have the desire, you know, to go back to see the country, you know, just for the nostalgic of it, or to visit family, but they can't. So you must have met like a lot of people who, as you've already mentioned, who either, you know, were born in El Salvador or maybe grew up in the first few years and then, you know, went maybe to the United States, to Canada, and then came back again. Can you tell a little bit more about those testimonials? Like, that would be...
Regina.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a dear friend of ours here. Her name is Regina. And she popped in to head our heads as you were speaking there, because first of all, there's plenty. There's dozens and dozens that we've met. But Regina has become a dear friend. She left 47 years ago, mm-hmm, when she was just a small
18,
child.
19.
Oh, really?
She went to study in school in America.
That's right. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Go ahead.
We interviewed her recently, actually, on the channel, and she sort of gave us her whole story. She is just over the moon to be here, mm-hmm, because she was here long enough when she was young to see the state of the country as it was. And now she's here seeing the state of the country as it is and what it's becoming. And I mean, El Salvador is her heritage. It's her identity. So in some respect, there's a piece of herself that's transforming along with the country. And it's just marvelous to see the relief and the joy on her face as she watches her country and her countrymen embark upon this new future.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's very dear to us, but she's one of a long list of people that we've met and bonded with since we got here.
Yeah, and when you're talking to her, it's so magical to see like the spark in her eyes of how excited, like she's a wonderful woman, and the way that she speaks about her country as coming back from all those years ago, she's more excited to be here than most expats coming to here for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And I love to see whenever we're talking to her and her eyes are like, and then it's so exciting for her because, you know, I like to think how she likes to say how much has changed with the country for the better that needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Like it's,
yeah, there's a sense of national pride in El Salvador, and there's a sense that this is a kind of a new version of that national pride. People feel like, I don't want to speak for Salvadoran people, but there's the sense is that mm-hmm. that there's a reinvigorated patriotism in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
People are, and this is a stark contrast to how it is in our home country of Canada. People here are looking to the future and they are seeing good days ahead.
Yeah.
And that gives them confidence, it gives them pride. Complete reverse polar opposite in Canada, where people are looking forward and they're seeing dystopia materializing in the future. There's a whole generation in Canada that has given up on home ownership completely. They know it's out of reach for them, they'll never get there. Whereas here, there's young people who are, their thinking is, I've got to study hard so that I can build something new for my country when I'm older. Mm-hmm. And these are children who are thinking like this.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
It's remarkable. Yeah.
You know, I don't want to get too philosophical, but I think in our society or our civilization, you know, we talk about, you know, as Bitcoiners, you know, we talk about trustless or trust minimized because we don't need to trust. It's just we are ruled by rules, not by rulers, you know, as we say. But when we talk about like Bukele and his, let's say, political team, there seems to be, I have the impression, as I said, you know, you got to go to El Salvador and make your own experience, like, yeah. Right? But is it something that you feel it's the essence of trust, you know, the essence of in every relationship, whatever, you know, whether it be at work or in your own relationship or in a society, in a community, it's always about trust. Do you mm-hmm. think that people, whether they live there now or been living there or now coming back as expats or not, that this feeling of trust is so strengthened now towards, let's say, the ethos and the mission and the values of Bukele and, you know, the whole structure within and around Bukele. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, essentially, it sounds like you're asking what the level of trust
right.
the population has in
Bukele. Yeah, or you yourself, actually. Like, you can see something in 10, 20, 50 years down the road? Like, or is the cat out of the bag and everything can only get better and better and better. You know what I'm saying?
Well, of the two of us, Jessica is definitely the optimist. And I'm definitely the cynic. So, do you want to go first or?
No, you can go.
Okay.
I need to formulate my answer.
Sure. So the way I look at it is, could Bukele let us down? Could he turn out to be something other than what he seems? Absolutely, that could happen. He's a person in power, and power corrupts. That's the nature of it. Certainly, if he's in power too long, no matter his intentions now, eventually it's going to turn sour. Apologies for the truck going by there. Right now, I look at what Bukele is doing, the actions that are being taken. And just recently here, the mayor of Soyopango was arrested on corruption charges. She misappropriated some $25,000 or something.
Yeah, I read about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. It was just a very fascinating. I really loved that statement by Bukele afterwards. It was in connection with that corruption case. Sorry to interrupt you. He said something, and I really loved that. He said, "We are here." I'm trying not to paraphrase him really. He said, "We're here to serve and not to be served." Is that what he said? Something like that?
He said, "We're here to serve the people, not ourselves."
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah.
And what struck us about that was that this person who was arrested was a member of his own party, at the Nuevas Ideas party. That didn't protect her from the force of law in this country. That's new to us.
Yeah.
There wasn't preferential treatment. It seemed as though being part of the party in power was no protection, and that it was what was legally and morally correct is what was guiding the decisions there, as opposed to what was politically expedient. And that kind of thing, it really boosts your confidence and it boosts your trust in this government and the direction it's taking the country.
Right.
Personal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now there's a wide variety of opinions there, especially among Salvadorans. We have found that, the approval rating is very high. And in our conversations with people around the country, it certainly seems like 85%, 90% is an accurate number, not a manufactured number like it would be back home. But there is some skepticism. There's a sense that, and again, this is just our perception, that the people of this country have been through so much for so long and have been let down so many times that there's a good percentage of the people who, while they approve of Bukele and are optimistic about Bukele, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's almost too good to be true, and there's a sense of reluctance to get too excited about Bukele because they don't want to be disappointed. So there's this cautious optimism. I feel like we've only been here about 6 months, but I feel like that's starting to turn into optimism. Like Independence Day was this outpouring of patriotic celebration, but we see it around the country. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's zoom out a little bit before I go into some other questions. Like, do you see for yourself, like people from not only from all kinds of demographics and societies and layers of society?
One moment, please. I'm sorry.
No problem. Yeah.
There's trucks going by outside. Yeah. It's rare for them to be in the neighborhood. On Sunday. Yeah. On New Year's Day. All right, I think they're gone now.
Yeah.
Okay. Please proceed.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, do you see, because the way, you know, I listen to all these testimonials, you know, I also listen to Max Kaiser, Stacey Herrera. I mean, they're like totally sworn into Bukele because I have the impression it's like, especially for Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert, who are like, you know, like totally rooted in and sworn into the ethos and mission of hyper-Bukelization and Bukele. And is it something you see for yourself I've been observing, you know, and reading all lots of articles about, you know, what's going on in El Salvador, building out the infrastructure, the rate of speed at which, you know, the roads are being built, entrepreneurs and investors coming into the country. Do you see that at that rate of speed, not to talk about Bitcoin City, because this is a long-term perspective, like 10 years or something, but hey, it's exciting. I mean, if there's like in 10, 20 years, at least one or two Bitcoin cities in El Salvador, I mean, this could be really a total paradigm shift. I'm sure you know Jeff Booth. I'm a huge fan of Jeff Booth when he talks about deflationary, you know, Bitcoin, the deflationary money, deflationary technology, abundance, prosperity. Is that something you're like looking forward to and you're seeing maybe literally with your own eyes, like entrepreneurs, investors, the rate of speed with things are being built out? Is that something you can witness at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so. We've only been in this neighborhood for a month now, and there are, I don't know how many new houses have gone up. Just down the road, there's two new gas stations already. A little bit further up the road, maybe 5 minutes, there's a whole new shopping center that went up.
That accepts Bitcoin?
Yes, and almost every store in there takes Bitcoin. The Puma gas station takes Bitcoin. We are set up right now where we could live our entire lives on Bitcoin and never use cash. We do use a bit of cash just for convenience, that some places don't take it, or it's like the milkshake machine at McDonald's, it's not working right now. That happens sometimes, and this is just a training issue. It's the first year, right?
Yeah.
So, the highway between here and the city has changed. Everything has changed in the 6 months that we've got here in terms of its modernization. Now, I don't want to overstate it. We're not in Dubai here. There is still, signs of the old El Salvador is still fully established and rooted everywhere. And that means like corrugated tin roofs and whatnot. That's around. It's never out of sight. But there is a momentum here and a velocity here and a growth here that is happening while our home country is pursuing a policy of degrowth, right? And slowing down infrastructure development, slowing down and inhibiting small business growth. Here, that's expanding. And it's not just external investment. It's not just, super savvy tech people coming in and creating a startup in El Salvador. It's also regular Salvadoran people, regular working class Salvadoran people, mm-hmm. who are opening taxi stands, pupuserias, surf shops and surf lesson businesses. All kinds of little businesses are exploding everywhere. And the thing we keep hearing from these new and young Salvadoran entrepreneurs is, 5 years ago, I never would have been able to do this because I would have been extorted and taxed out of business.
Yeah. Right.
And not anymore. And so this is a place where, if you want to start a business, mm-hmm. This is a good environment, very friendly environment to start a business.
Yeah. And there's a lot of room for competition in that too. It's mm-hmm. not like, cutthroat, you got to be the top of the best. Right now with the gas station that is going on, that has just opened, a new one is going right next to it.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be any type of there's competition because there's competition with any kind of company that is going against one another. But you see it even in the market vendors. Mm-hmm. When you go to get your groceries or on the side of the road, that's with right. the coconut stands, there's more than enough room for everybody, mm-hmm. if they want to make something of themselves and have that opportunity here. And that's something that I really, really, really respect and enjoy about this country the most, because back home in Canada, it wouldn't be like that. First of all, there's a big chance that the government would shut you down before you even had a chance. Mm-hmm. And then it's, if you're going up against, the big guys or even people who are on your same playing field, it's all, I wouldn't say necessarily wouldn't go as far as to say backstabbing, but there's a lot of
it's not easy to succeed without stepping on necks.
Yeah.
Back home.
Yeah, that's a good.
Whereas here it seems like the entrepreneurs are all working together toward a prosperous future for everybody. You go to the street vendors in Libertad, like you were mentioning, and people aren't trying to steal your business from other vendors. They are referring you to other vendors, mm-hmm. and saying, hey, this person also has these things that mm-hmm. you can get. And this person, you can get, if you go into the vendors and you're open and at ease, you'll be like a pinball going back and forth from stall to stall as you get referred everywhere, because everyone's working together to increase their businesses as kind of one community. There's a business community here, not a business gladiator war zone, right? Yeah.
So that's fascinating. So you mentioned in the beginning, there's a lot of people from around the world coming to El Salvador, would it be, as tourists or, permanently? It seems like this is the melting pot, right? Because I was, I spent just a short time maybe in New York and 5 years in total in California, Los Angeles. And But for me, that was already like a melting pot. But the way, you know, the pictures or the whatever documentaries or videos I see, or the testimonials you're giving, it's like I have the impression that this could be the ultimate melting pot, you know, a peaceful, you know, society from all around the world. It's must be, yeah, inspiring, you know.
Well, you know, credit for that is owed entirely to the people of El Salvador, who are just, I mean, the welcome that we've received and that people we know have received has been just overwhelming. There is a sense of, we're so happy you're here. Thank you for choosing El Salvador. Thank you for being here in El Salvador. Thank you for helping El Salvador just by being here.
Yeah.
There's a warmth, a receptiveness, and a genuine interest in, who are you? What's your story? What's your background? Do you know this about El Salvador? Do you want to try this or experience this aspect of the culture? Do you want to know this about our heritage? They want to share the story with you, and they want to integrate you into the community. On our YouTube channel, we were astounded to discover that like 60% of our audience is Salvadorans living abroad, which I guess makes sense in retrospect, but we didn't expect that in the beginning. And we keep hearing in the comments, in the emails, and in the Twitter. And by the way, if any of you guys are watching, thank you so much.
Yes.
Over and over again, you guys are Salvadorans now. You're welcome to the country. Welcome to the
home.
Family.
Welcome home.
Yeah, to your new home. Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's a bit of skepticism, as there would be anywhere. You occasionally encounter a bit of skepticism. But by and large, overwhelmingly so, the receptiveness has made us and everyone we know feel totally at ease and at home and welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's spreading out. And so you're starting to see people more and more from all over the world coming here, because word is getting out about Salvador is open for business.
Yeah.
And they want you to come.
That's amazing. You know, I mean, I don't have to tell you that we live in really crazy times right now. It's like, you know, freedom or slavery.
Yeah.
Total surveillance, or you know, whatever. I mean, or just, you know, pure freedom. Do you see El Salvador, or the developments taking? Do you see like El Salvador the place where we can finally, you know, hit the tipping point of a new? I don't want to, you know, go into, you know, utopian sci-fi, but
sure,
do you see like? Which I love. I mean, I do read a lot of scientific, technological stuff, but and I'm a huge fan, you know, of not only digital technologies, but you know, I think there's the potential, the realistic potential, to develop and to produce technologies in every sector we can think of. You know, whether it be transportation, energy, nuclear, plasma, you know, all sorts of transportation. I mean, you know, I have these discussions with a lot of my guests, you know, who are into this. Also, you know, that's why I mentioned Jeff Booth, because I often said to Jeff Booth, you know, isn't it weird that for at least 100 years we haven't had like a different propulsion system in the, you know.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, would it be hydrogen technology, nuclear technology? And is that something you might be talking about or envisioning, you know, in, let's maybe not in 10 years, but let's say in 20, 30 years, do you see El Salvador as the, you know, country, the paradigm shift, you know, when it comes to all kinds of technological comfort for, you know, to serve humanity, to serve the society, and create abundance?
Perhaps, but I don't think that it will be just El Salvador.
Yeah.
I believe that it'll be more so.
Yeah.
And there will be a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll happen when El Salvador and Central American countries become the first world.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you know, say if you have kids and you come here, or we have kids,
mm-hmm.
we may unfortunately get to the point where, you know, we will have to say to them, well, like, you know, well, eat all your food, because, you know, people in Canada, you know, they were, or like,
yeah.
we believe there will be a shift,
yeah.
whether it's like,
yeah.
economically, Or
eat all your supper, because people in Canada, all they have is mealworm slurry.
Yeah.
Coming out of a hole in the wall in their pod.
And I mean, God forbid that ever happens. Like, you know, it is our home, and it does hurt to think about that kind of stuff. But I think that it won't be just El Salvador alone. Mm-hmm. It will be all the.
Yeah. El Salvador is going to be setting an example.
Yeah.
For the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to reach an inflection point where nation states around the world are going to have to decide what direction they want to go. Do they want to go the CBDC, World Economic Forum direction, or do they want to go the decentralized power Bitcoin direction? And this country is setting the alternative example.
Mm-hmm. It's already started.
Yes, and because it's the first mover, it has that first mover advantage. Right. And as those lines are drawn, and we start to see that the I guess you could say almost bipolar world, the dual system where one is absolute tyranny and the other is characterized by liberty, El Salvador having the first move on the liberty side is going to be sort of the genesis block of the new world. And we will see, I believe, I hope, as the cynic and pessimist of us, I still hope that we will see El Salvador become known in history for its inventions, its innovations, its contributions that spread around the world and improve the lives of millions or billions into the next century.
I love that.
Are we certain that it'll happen? I mean, of course, we're not certain of anything, right? But we do know that of all the places on Earth where that kind of thing could happen, the greatest likelihood by far is right here in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that. Love that vision. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. In a lot of conversations I've had, there's some, you know, people who know, you know, more knowledgeable than me, but they say, you know, we don't need like a huge, like critical mass. It just needs maybe 3-5 or maybe maximum 6-7% of the population of the Earth's population of the Earth's, you know, structures or nation states to adopt Bitcoin, you know, to go into a hyper-Bitcoinization drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the critical mass for you? I mean, because there will be eventually sooner or later, there will be neighboring countries or other countries in Latin America and in Africa. What is that tipping point for you?
Interesting question. What do you think?
I've never really thought about it before.
What does it look like when we say we've made it, we're there? What does it look like?
Because you then, know, like, you know, it's just going to be a chain reaction. You know, it's just going to be an overdrive.
Well, I think there's a lot of people who are expecting that, you know, every merchant everywhere will take Bitcoin, and now. Right. There's a surf shop down in Palmar that doesn't take Bitcoin. Therefore, the experiment has failed and we're not getting anywhere. And it's a big flop. And, you know, and it's been 1 year. Right. We hear that there are some Bitcoiners down here who are very impatient and want all of it now and are very disappointed that sometimes they have to use fiat garbage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get it. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm done with it, too. But I think, yeah, like you said, this is a chain reaction type process, and it's bit by bit, one piece at a time.
Yeah.
There are like Bitcoin Beach over in El Zante. Everyone's familiar with that, I'm sure. That seed has blossomed, produced a fruiting tree, and now new seeds are starting to sprout in Guatemala, in Nicaragua, in Honduras. Little bits here, Bitcoin Lake, Bitcoin Island, Bitcoin Jungle. They've taken the white paper of Bitcoin Beach, which they released open source, and are now implementing that plan in their own country. Okay. So we're starting to see not just production, but reproduction of the idea. And it's slow, it's organic, but it's like slowly then suddenly, right?
Yeah, it's like when, like, you know, the telephone was invented.
Yeah.
At some point or another, there was only 5 telephones in the entire world.
Exactly, yeah.
And it took, what, like 50 to 65 years for
the whole world,
to, like, be on board with it.
Yeah.
And hopefully that, you know, with modern day technology, it takes a lot less time.
Exactly,
than
as we can see.
50
right?
to 65
right.
years
right.
to get there.
Yeah.
But I think it's on a good trajectory, and
Yeah.
I think we're going to get there. This is my estimate, maybe like in the next 20 years.
That's conservative, I think, to be honest with you. I think
it's is conservative.
It's cautious. It's a good cautious estimate, or approximation. I was going to say, it's really, so let me, because in one of your videos, or was it on Twitter, where you, you show your sort of a green card? Is that like your permanent residency card?
Temporary
residency. Yeah.
Do you want to like talk about like, are there any advantages, or if you want to establish a business or tax incentive, is there anything like you want to share with the listeners?
Well, first thing that comes to mind is, so as we mentioned in the beginning, we're at a tropical paradise. There's beaches. We have a swimming pool over there, and it's very lovely. But the circumstances of our arrival here were somewhat traumatic. And we did have to leave our home country, and we're not here entirely by choice. We were forced to make this decision. Don't get me wrong. We're thrilled to be here. We love this country, and we feel very blessed to be here. But there was some pain around that transition. And when we first arrived here, we had just our 90-day tourist visas. And those are highly cancelable. And that clock is ticking.
Yeah, like a timer.
Yeah. And we did not want to go back to Canada. And there was a sense of urgency to get the visa situation sorted out, to get the temporary residency permit sorted out, so that we can just breathe out and be like, okay, no one's putting us on a plane where we don't have to go back, or we don't have to go to a different country, and we can start to settle and establish ourselves here. That's point number one. Getting that permit to be here for a year, which is the type we got, gives us some time to just get settled in a little bit. So that just mentally, it's huge to have that.
Yeah.
It has enabled us to open our first bank account here, which, the only reason we have it is so YouTube can pay us. So, but other than that, we don't need it.
With less bureaucracy, I guess, or hardly any bureaucracy. Is that like very bureaucracy?
Yeah, it's, everything is negotiable here, right?
Yeah.
Like when we first went to the bank to open the account, they said, no, you have to have a permanent residency, not a temporary. And then our interpreter and friend who was with us just started speaking in Spanish to the teller, and they went on for 5 minutes, and next thing you know, they're opening a bank account for us. So, having the card, it's for us mainly, it's the ability to say, yes, we have permission to be here. We've done it the right way. We have legal permission to be here, and we're abiding by the law.
Yeah.
And it's given us some latitude to start engaging in different types of transactions. Like we have a motorcycle now, and we've registered it and whatnot. And it's also the step towards citizenship. You have to be here for 5 years as a foreigner to work your way towards citizenship. And having this card is the first year of that. And now we're on the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there was this talk about like if you invest, what was that? I don't know the amount. Was it $100,000 or something? Or in Bitcoin, denominated, where you can like literally buy yourself the permanent residency or citizenship.
Yeah. You said 3 Bitcoin, wasn't it?
I think it was 3 Bitcoin. Yeah. And I'm not sure if that program was ever rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the path we took. I guess it's different for everybody. Like our situation was pretty straightforward. We're both online workers. We're digital nomads. And there's a visa for that. It's called the F3. Or F3B visa. For us, it was very straightforward. But there's visas for missionaries, for people who want to go to school here. Mm-hmm. There's visas for starting a business. There's one, I believe, that is an investment-oriented visa. If you want more information about that, the people to talk to are escape2elsalvador.org.
Jeremy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeremy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He handled our case with white gloves, and was an absolute master for us.
Yeah.
And took care of us as we were freaking out, being like, Jeremy, oh my God, we don't want to go back home.
Yeah.
Help us.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the biggest, the coolest thing about working with Jeremy is that, and I don't mean to get all sappy on if he's hearing, I'm just so happy that, like, at the end of all of this, he's become our friend.
Like, yeah.
He's just one of the most amazing guys we've ever, mm-hmm. ever met. He's so patient, and mm-hmm. he is an endless book of knowledge. You can come to him with anything, yeah, yeah. any question.
I really love his presentations. I never talked to him like personally on the phone, but I had some chit chat like per DM. But his presentation, was it like, what was the conference?
Bitcoin,
exactly. I mean, the way, you know, and then on the pods he went, or the interviews he did, is, or the presentations he did, it's just very, you know, calm and sober, yeah. and factual based. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. So yeah. He's
Jeremy recently had a Christmas party on Christmas Day at his house, and he invited us and many others. And what an experience that was.
Mm-hmm.
A condo full of people from all over the world, including a good number of Canadians, and everyone is sharing their harrowing stories of narrowly escaping their countries and all the bizarre and strange things they had to do to get out of their countries and get to El Salvador. And Jeremy has worked with all of them to one extent or another to create a legal path for them to come to this country and start putting down roots. It was marvelous to witness that.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what it must feel like for Jeremy to look at this number of people in his home that are there in part because of what his organization has helped to do in this world. It's it was great.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, anyway, you know, I mean, I've been talking with my girlfriend and about, you know, our future, and we definitely got to come to El Salvador, you know, and really experience it. Just, you know, it's no way around it. But we have brainstormed about, you know, establishing a business, because she has her own business. You know, her background is actually a laboratory, but she's like totally into botanical stuff and natural, mm-hmm. holistic healing and health, you know, and extraction processes. And so, you know, everything organic, biological. So right. This is something I was thinking, if El Salvador, the government El Salvador, could loosen up, or as you said, you know, reduce like substantially like bureaucracy, increase even more, you know, the tax incentives, whatever regulatory environment there is, you know, like loosen it up and or with its, you know, if we're talking like, for example, about cannabis, you know, THC or all these other substances that are still, let's say, but I'm just talking about like medical application,
right.
You know,
right.
that would be like a great, a great idea, you know, to come to El Salvador and establish business there, create business, not only business opportunities, but create employment for the mm-hmm. native, you know, not only for native people, but people in living in El Salvador, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you see some sort of a development there, like, or discussions on let's say on a political level to accelerate this process besides hyper-Bitcoinization?
Right. Well, as far as we understand, if you're coming into El Salvador to open a business, there is a price tag to that, to get that set up. And it's somewhat higher than is standard around the world. We understand that's true. It's after that's done, you're not dealing with so many guardrails, boundaries, and restrictions on what you can do. In terms of regulatory burden here in El Salvador, well, so there's essentially no regulations around the kind of lights you can have on your car. You can have strobe lights and LEDs all the way around, and your blinkers can be different colors. And it's if that's the case with the vehicle regulations, I imagine, anyway, we don't own a business here. We would imagine that the regulatory environment around business is equally, shall we say, liberal.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. We have seen not so much, because we haven't looked into it, not so much the letter of the law and how it's changing, but more so just the rate at which businesses are opening and are being opened by Salvadorans and expats alike. If it were difficult, or if there was a lot of red tape like there is in our home country, we just wouldn't see that happening. The pace and volume of businesses that are opening strongly suggests that there's opportunity here, mm-hmm. and the barriers are few.
Do you see so-called circular economies scaling up or unfolding in the next few years? I mean, that would be amazing. You know, like, let's say neighboring countries or within El Salvador. You know, like creating. When we talk about free private cities or Bitcoin cities or smaller free private cities, do you see like something like that along the lines where all of a sudden, you know, there's like a huge substantial increase in whatever import, export, trading with the unit of account of Bitcoin?
Right. Well, I guess to have a true circular economy, you would have to have a collection of nation states that all have the resources each other needs to be sufficient, self-sufficient. Right now, at some point along the supply chain, there is a US dollar denominated terminus. Somewhere someone has to exchange Bitcoin for US dollars in order to do business, whether because of their jurisdiction or whatever it happens to be, there still is that. And so while we're seeing, you know, the initial signs of the Bitcoin circular economy here, and certainly there's people who are dedicated to that project and are building it with everything they have every day, as long as that USD denominated terminus exists, there's going to be a break in that chain, and the USD price of Bitcoin is going to have an impact on how that economy is run. That's just going to be true until it isn't. And I think we're looking at just a matter of time before that just isn't true anymore, as this project expands and grows out into countries that have different resources and different things that can be denominated in Bitcoin and that different countries and different communities need.
And I think like it's important to note, like, you know, how as of right now in the current market, everything is down, everything is, you know, people aren't as inclined to jump on board. With the, but like I've said this before in other conversations I've had with people, that it's more important to educate people when you're down, so that when the inevitable happens, there will be a bigger, like, and there won't be people clamoring, being like, oh, it's like, you know, FOMO and you need to put in the groundwork when you're at the bottom before to be
prepared. Right, you're totally right. They're all about education and preparing people, preparation and comprehension, and then, you know, then eventually people are gonna have even more, you know, optimism and experience, you know,
and I think like a lot of people say, oh, you know, bear market, El Salvador lost $50 million on their Bitcoin, and we'll just not talk about the tourism dollars that are coming in and how they've gained much more than they've lost, and it's just a paper loss. We won't talk about that. But leaving all that aside, I don't know if maybe you agree, I don't know, but I think this bear market has been absolutely the right thing for a country that just adopted Bitcoin, because what we're seeing is the education on what Bitcoin is and how to use it is happening when emotions are not running too high. Emotions are calm, they're low. People are like, well, I mean, what's the big deal? Okay, let's find out about it, let's learn. They get that foundation in place before we have a manic blow off top, which gets everybody all like wound up and emotional. Next thing you know, they're buying Ethereum and Luna and Polkadot. And having this bear market to give us a period of time to sort of get the word out about what Bitcoin is, why it's different, how to use it, I think it's a blessing, a tremendous blessing for this country. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd have a lot of people getting burned as they, you know, they first hear about Bitcoin and then, like so many, including us, move on into, as you could say, ship coins to avoid the profanity.
No, but what I really love, you know, reading about or when I hear about, you know, the educational process in El Salvador, or, you know, all these kids in schools are being taught and empowered, you know, with the knowledge of Bitcoin and what is that program called? First Diploma or something?
Primer Bitcoin.
Mi Primer Bitcoin.
It's really touching. It's really because, you know, if you don't start with the children, where do you start? You know, so this is sort of a a really empowering out of the box, you know, education for people to, yeah, it's mind boggling. It's the rate of speed that things are going on in El Salvador. It really makes me more than optimistic. It makes me really excited.
We had the great honor and privilege to attend a Bitcoin diploma graduation ceremony.
Oh, really?
In Paco. Yeah. We joined the boys at Mi Primer Bitcoin out there for the ceremony, captured some footage as well. And, you know, there was a few moments where we stepped back and we're just like, wow, look at this. Look at this. These people are holding a diploma that says Bitcoin on it. And we know that that diploma means they can set up a hardware wallet, recover with the seed phrase, custody their Bitcoin, understand the importance of custodying their Bitcoin, and they understand the history of money and why Bitcoin fixes this.
Exactly.
These are children. These are junior high kids and high school kids who understand that and are holding up a diploma that says they understand that. It's got the Bitcoin word on it, and they're smiling and they're so happy.
Yeah.
Like, what does a country look like after a generation has been raised that
exactly way? Yeah. And hey, let's be honest. I mean, we never had education about money.
No.
What is money, you know? I mean, this is so such a paradigm shift and civilizational, you know, shift. It's more than exciting, you know. This is where evolution, you know, takes place, you know. It's all starts with the comprehension and empowerment of children, you know. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, indoctrinate them, you know, with this traditional school system, which I'm not a fan anymore. That's why I'm a huge fan of, you know, you probably know Daniel Bitten. I mean, Daniel Prince of Once Bitten podcast. He's like the expert on homeschooling, and
So
I'm a huge fan of his, you know, of his knowledge and his mission, you know, to boost homeschooling, you know, free the mind of children, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like when I was a child, my education and money came in this form. I had a dollar a week allowance as a child, and for 50 weeks, almost an entire year, I saved up my dollar a week allowance in a bank account that my parents had helped me open, right? And this was now enough to purchase a bike, which is all I wanted. I just wanted a bike, right? I was saving for a bike. And I went to the bank to get my $50 out so that I could buy my bike. And the teller at the bank said, she started grilling me, being like, what do you need all this money for?
Jesus.
Why are you taking out all this money?
Oh my God.
What are you gonna spend it on? What is this about? Tell me what you're planning to do here. I'm like 8 years old.
Like, none of your business.
I'm just, yeah, right?
Nailed it. That's exactly what it's about, yeah.
Uh-huh. But like, so the lesson that I learned there was that your money isn't really yours. Your use of it is permissioned. You have to obtain authorization, and the control of your life belongs to institutions. That was the education I got in money as a child, and everyone else in Canada got that education as a child through that experience or ones like it. Here in El Salvador, the education in money is A, that's wrong and immoral,
exactly.
And B, here's the technology to prevent anyone from ever doing that to you or your children or your children's children forever.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And if you're watching this, you have to come here and see it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, our daughter or the children of this generation, I mean, they're going to grow up and they're going to laugh. Like, you know, they're going to go into museums and it's like, what the fuck, you know, I mean, these people are doing, you know. So
that's right.
Anyway, Jessica, Ryan, it was a huge pleasure talking to you. It's not only informative, inspirational, but really it makes me, it's beyond hope. You know, hope is such a hopium word, but mm-hmm. It gives me, you know, so much confidence and trust, you know, in that we can achieve this. We can make this happen, you know, may the powers be whatever, you know, but we can do this. Yeah. So mm-hmm. Is there anything like, we should mention before we wrap up, and maybe you can also, you know, share your information, like where people can find you.
Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah, you can find us on YouTube. We are Two People in Paradise. We are on with the channel. We are documenting our journey here, our story here, as well as the journey and story of the country.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a little bit about Bitcoin, but really that's kind of in the background. We're more interested in telling the story of El Salvador and what these people of El Salvador are doing, having been empowered by Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And you can also find us on Twitter. We are at Two People in Para. Can't miss us. And we also recommend that you head over to escapetoelsalvador.org. If you're thinking about making a move to El Salvador, talk to Jeremy. And if you do so, please use the code PARADISEPEOPLE to receive a discount. And of course, we also get an acknowledgement for that as well. So just being transparent.
Yes, of right? course, yeah. We're really looking forward. I mean, if we ever come to El Salvador, we'd love please. To meet you guys for coffee, as I can see on your YouTube channel right now. What's the name of your YouTube channel again?
Two People in Paradise.
Two people in paradise.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So, thank you so much again. And I'll hopefully talk to you soon in the near future. And take care, guys. Okay?
Wonderful.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Ciao.